following takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to FBC Radio Live. That's right, it's Wednesday. I'm Ian Glendon. We got a little bit of news to talk about to start things off today. That's right, if you're just waking up and just checking Twitter and checking out the latest NFL news and transaction wire, you will see that the New England Patriots, yes, those New England Patriots have released former All-Pro cornerback Stephon Gilmore. The two have been trying to work towards a deal to bring the cornerback back, to satisfy the cornerback, but it does not seem to be happening for the two, and now Stephon Gilmore is a free agent. So we're going to talk about that, and to do so, yes, if you're looking on the screen, you can see that John Sapicetti is on the phone. John, good morning, and do you think that you would be in as much demand as Stephon Gilmore if you were a free agent cornerback?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm healthier probably right now than Stephon Gilmore is. I'm getting my cataracts fixed, so, you know, I'll be able to see what's going on the football field. So, yeah, I think I'm a better option right now. But it was a surprise, wasn't it, that they just released him? Although it's never a surprise with Bill Belichick. I mean, released Cam Newton, and that surprised us. You know, he traded Richard Seymour just before a season. He traded Logan Mankin just before a season. So he'll make these dramatic moves oftentimes, you know, every other year. So it was a surprise that they just released him. You'd hoped that maybe in the offseason or even before he got hurt last year that you could have moved on from him if you were in a rebuilding stage and you knew you weren't going to sign him long term, that you could trade him for maybe a second round pick or a third round pick. I'm sure his value's gone down since the injury a year ago. But yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I'm right there with you. Like, you cannot I mean, you shouldn't be surprised by anything Bill Belichick does, but at the same time, he still manages to surprise you. And in this right. case, that's, you know, sort of what I will. I mean, I was already up, but to see the alert on the phone come up, say, hey, the Patriots released Stephon Gilmore, I was shocked. And then I reverted back to my 20 plus years of watching this team and watching how it operates. And I'm like, well, it shouldn't surprise anyone. And, you know, look, this is a guy who, you know, obviously the two sides were working towards trying to come to some sort of agreement to a contract. They couldn't do that. And on top of that, Gilmore has been out on the PUP list with a quad injury, which reportedly he is getting healthy. Like, I don't, like, as far as I'm concerned, or not me, but like, as far as I know, any sort of setback with the injury, I wasn't aware of. You know what I mean? Like, like we weren't hearing, as far as we know, like he was trending towards being healthy. Obviously, being on the PUP list, you have to be out for the first 6 weeks. So regardless of if he's 95% or 65%, you know, he wasn't going to be able to play this week, next week, last week, whatever. But as far as I know, he's trending towards being healthy. Now, he hasn't played in a game since week 16 of last year for the Patriots. So, you know, again, it's been a while since he's been on the football field. But assuming he's healthy, I mean, there's going to be a there should be a long, long, long line out the door waiting to try to woo him to come over if you're a contender. I mean, that's the thing. It's like he's your best cornerback on, I would say, a majority of these contenders if they decide they want to sign him.
Sure. I mean, if Tampa signs him, he's obviously their best cornerback.
Might be their only cornerback.
Their only cornerback. I mean, you'd have Richard Sherman and Stephon Gilmore, two, you know, potentially future Hall of Famers or borderline Hall of Famers, who are both, you know, on the back nine and have had some injury concerns the last couple of years. Kansas City's obviously going to be in play because it always seems like every free agent is either going to Kansas City or Tampa Bay. They're like Coke and Pepsi. They've got this, you know, battle going on to get back to the Super Bowl in February. I think there's a few other teams that you could throw in there. I think the Packers, who generally don't jump into these things. They're more of a draft and develop type of organization. But we're going to have to see what the injury is to Jaire Alexander, who's as good a cornerback as there is in the NFL. If he's going to be out for an extended period of time, maybe they jump into it. I think the Cowboys are always in play because they look like contenders. And I'll throw the Ravens in there because they've had some injuries in their secondary. And maybe even Arizona because there was a rumor earlier that maybe the Patriots and Arizona were going to work on a deal. And now they're the only 4-0 team, so they would look to upgrade their secondary. Sure, anybody that adds Stephon Gilmore is going to have a better secondary that day than they had the day before. The only thing is he just going to play this year and then probably opt out into free agency next year, or is he only going to go to a place that's going to give him some sort of long-term deal? I think that's risky, right, Ian? I mean, if say you're the Buccaneers and you go, sure, yeah, Cam will give you a three-year, $50 million deal, you don't even know what he is right now. I mean, as great as he is, he's coming off an injury that was a pretty serious injury, and he's 31. So I think it's going to have to be go prove yourself for this year and then enter free agency as maybe a Super Bowl champ and a guy who still has a few years left.
Yeah, look, I think that's the obvious route for both parties involved. Like, I don't think, you know, I think if Stephon Gilmore goes out there expecting to sign another 4 or 5 year deal, I think he's greatly overvaluing himself, not necessarily because of his play, but like you said, I mean, we assume he's going to be healthy. But, you know, at 31 years old, I mean, you got to take into account, you know, how and when these players, especially cornerbacks, tend to drop off. Remember when Nnamdi Asamoah was the greatest cornerback ever, and then overnight it became, you know, the exact opposite. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with Stephon Gilmore. We've seen guys, Charles Woodson, obviously make the move to safety and extend his career. Darrell Revis, aside from maybe his last season, but even Darrell Revis was around the same age that Stephon Gilmore is now when he retired and left. So, you know, there is some risk involved, but I got to imagine that both Stephon and, you know, whatever team, especially contenders, that would be interested in signing him are only looking for that 1 year deal. And I think it works for both because, again, the Bucks, you know, that's the biggest obstacle for the Bucks is the money. Okay, well, how are they going to afford this? Well, you can get a little creative with the salary cap. And, you know, this is a player that, again, I think you make exceptions and make moves to try to accommodate him if you can. You know, because, again, he comes in, and especially a team like the Bucks who are just, you know, I mean, they were starting Richard Sherman the other day, and he had been practicing for 3 days. Like, that's how desperate they are at corner. But even if they had a healthy group, Stephon Gilmore comes in and he's your best cornerback. Again, assuming he's healthy. Like, I mean, it's one of those really rare situations where you have, again, a guy who was a Pro Bowler last year. He was an All-Pro in 2018 and 2019 become available. And, you know, you have several teams that are in position to go to a Super Bowl or contend for a Super Bowl that have issues in the secondary. So what Stephon Gilmore is reportedly looking for, which is around $15 million a year, he might end up getting because of the market. Like, there's going to be no shortage of interest in Stephon Gilmore. Even if it's a perceived risk to sign him for this season, I think teams are willing to take that risk on a guy that could drastically change their defense.
And you don't have to give up anything to get him. Yeah. And that's kind of the interesting part of this is why didn't the Patriots trade him? Like, at the trade deadline last year when it looked like they weren't really contending and they were going to rebuild and they weren't going to sign him long term, maybe they should have moved him at the trade deadline or in the offseason. I think they thought they could get a first round pick, which sounds all well and good. But again, cornerbacks that are 30, 31 years old aren't going to generally bring that back to you. I think they saw what Jalen Ramsey went for, but Jalen Ramsey, when Jacksonville traded him to the Rams, was 25 years old and right in his prime. And the Rams are always ready, willing, and able to move first-round picks.
Yeah,
the Rams haven't had a first-round pick or selected someone in the first round since 2016.
They won't have one for three or four years.
They're like an NBA team. They're like an NBA team. It's like, we're just going to give up first-round picks. We'll get the established stars, and then we'll hit on our second- and third-round picks, which the Rams have been able to do. So that's my big concern, is why didn't the Patriots get something in return for him? But in the meantime, don't you think that the three best quarterbacks in football, right, Brady, Rodgers, and Mahomes, are going to look at this and say, we all need cornerbacks. Because, again, we don't know what the situation is with Jair Alexander. I know Tom Brady has an open line to the front office of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and could probably go in right now and say, go get him.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's like speed dial under poison control. That's how high up
exactly. Yeah, he is. Yeah, remember Seinfeld when, you know, they jockeyed around where the speed dials were and, you know, they got upset because they moved from, like, number 2 to number 8. I think Brady could get on the phone and say, or just walk into the office and say, go get him. I'm sure Mahomes has that cachet in Kansas City. Now, we know the situation with Aaron Rodgers, what happened in the offseason, and they acquiesced and went and got Randall Cobb, who had a really nice game Sunday against the Steelers, was a big part of their win. Does he now go to Brian Gutekunst, if he's even speaking to him, and says, we need a cornerback because we don't know what the situation is with Jaire Alexander? I mean, that injury looks pretty serious, like maybe not season-ending, but, you know, enough. And they could also – look, everybody needs a cornerback.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost like your bullpen, right? Like, you can never have enough bullpen arms. You need as many cornerbacks as you can find because, you know, oftentimes you're going up against three and four elite receivers. So maybe Rodgers goes to Gutekunst and say, go get him. And now, you know, there's a bidding war for Stephon Gilmore with Kansas City, Green Bay, and Tampa Bay, who are probably still perceived as the three best teams in football or the three best chances to win the Super Bowl. And I'm sure that's going to be a part of what Gilmore is interested in, is going to a contending team, show that he can play, and then he's a free agent next year.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm uncertain as to why, you know, there wasn't an ability to trade him. Now, again, I'm not, you know, people maybe immediately go to, you know, criticizing Bill Belichick, but you know, at the end of the day, I know they needed cap space. I think they were really, really up against it, and this obviously creates immediate amount of cap space for them. And again, this could precipitate another move. Perhaps they're looking at bolstering another area of the defense because, you know, at the end of the day, as much as, you know, it'd be nice to have Stephon Gilmore out there, the Patriots defense held their own against Tom Brady and the Bucs fairly well. And you know, whether that's a bit of a mirage and maybe that's the best it's going to be, you know, so be it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think maybe, you know, this was could be a situation where both parties realized that they just weren't getting anywhere. And you know what? Maybe Bill just threw him a bone. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's just like, look, we're obviously not going to come to a situation. Like, he's a realist. He's not, you know, he's not going to sit there and you know, overvalue his hand or really, you know, stick into something when he realized, you know, when it's a losing cause. So maybe he was just like, look, we need the cap space, you know, let Stephon go play. And you know what? We had a great 4-year run together, went to 2 Super Bowls. He won 2 All Pros. And, you know, this all started with people bitching and moaning about throwing him a contract. And now look at it. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's quite a, it's quite a reversal of when this all came together. The people complaining like, wow, I can't believe they gave him that much money. Well, guess what? Now you're complaining that they're cutting him. And, you know, so be it. You know, the Patriots are going to have to move on. Stephon Gilmore wasn't going to be here for 4 or 5 more years. And you know what? Sometimes ripping the Band-Aid off and just moving on is the best option. So
I just wish they could have got something for him, which maybe they could because of the injury. But look, I mean, maybe Belichick's getting soft in his old age because he wasn't afraid to trade Logan Mankins just before the start of the 2014 season. Wasn't afraid to trade Richard Seymour before the 2009 season. Now, he did release Randy Moss back in 2010, and that was a surprise. But then when you look back at it, it really wasn't, because Moss was going after coaches and his attitude was not very good at that point, which is not a surprise with Randy Moss. So, not able to get something in return. Maybe they looked at what has transpired the first 4 weeks and that they're higher on Jalen Mills than maybe the rest of us are. But Jalen Mills, I thought, had a pretty good game Sunday night. He was matched up against Chris Godwin, who may be the Buccaneers' best receiver. You can make a case that he's their best receiver, or is it Mike Evans, or is it Antonio Brown? I mean, they have just a plethora of great receivers, but I thought he did a really good job against Chris Godwin.
Well,
so maybe they're looking and saying J.C. Jackson, Jalen Mills, you know, and then you go from there, Jonathan Jones as your third corner. And again, we've heard the rumors that Jamie Collins is probably coming back to the Patriots. So you use the money that you save with Gilmore and use it for Jamie Collins. Maybe that's the grand scheme, the grand plan.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I think that's one of the storylines that kind of got lost a lot in this past weekend's game, is that, you know, the Patriots, for what it's worth, held that Buccaneers offense in check, you know, relative to what, you know, they were doing to that point. You know what I mean? Because Tom was obviously averaging close to 400 yards passing a game, and he was held to under 300. And the offense, you know, did move the ball at times, but the secondary did play well. Now, again, you add Stephon Gilmore to the mix. You're an elite secondary. Right now, you're a pretty good one with what seems like a lot of potential. And again, that does include having guys like Jalen Mills, who seem to be exceeding expectations just a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, look, this is it's an interesting thing. Again, it shouldn't shock you. And generally, and I know obviously Bill Belichick's going to get a lot of criticism, but all those moves that you pointed out, all these like surprise cuts or trades or whatever, I think Bill Belichick won every single one of them, if I'm not mistaken. Like they cut.
Yeah, but you got a first round pick for Richard Seymour, which turned out to be Nate Solder, right?
So yeah.
That worked out fine.
Which worked out fine,
because they weren't going to sign Seymour long term. So that worked out. The Logan Mankins one just kind of shocked me because he was one of my favorite players on the Patriots. And to me, he's you could say Randy Moss or Wes Welker, but to me, Logan Mankins being a guy who was drafted by the Patriots is the best Patriot of the last 20 years that did win a Super Bowl. Well, like he just got caught in the middle, right?
Literally.
He got drafted in 05,
yeah.
And then he left in 14. And he was a fabulous player.
Oh, I mean, he was phenomenal.
I think of this era, he's their best guard, right?
And if you remember correctly, Bill Belichick got a lot of criticism for that. So that just kind of points out how silly it is to sit there and complain about Belichick
but
drafting.
He did get draft picks, though, for Logan Mankins, right?
And again, I don't remember the exact scenario or situation at the time, but I can't imagine that the Patriots are able to go out and get Darrelle Revis with the money
right,
that they
I
had to
you.
Pay. Which, yeah. Again, you don't get Darrelle Revis, you probably don't win the Super Bowl that year because that's how important he was. So that situation, Lawyer Malloy, they obviously already had Rodney Harrison. Obviously, mm-hmm. That very first game, it looked like it was a disaster, but, you know, by the end of the year, no one remembered, and now it's just the footnote in when you tell the story of the Patriots dynasty. So, you know, look, as much as it's like, and same with Randy Moss. I mean, boy, did Randy Moss fall off quickly after he left the Patriots. I mean, the stint with the Titans or the Vikings and then the Titans, it was just awful. So, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Bill Belichick made the right move, even though it looks right now like, wow, what are you thinking? And the reaction is surprise and shock. And like, you know, this kind of brings into question our conversation from yesterday where it's like, you know, this information doesn't get out. Like just looking at the reaction from those that are most connected, there was still a level of surprise when it came to this. You know what I'm saying? So the idea that, and real quick, I'll throw it out there, the idea that this one guy, Seth Wickersham, was able to get inside information about the workings, inner workings of Belichick's mind is just even more ridiculous. But that conversation is over. We're talking about Stephon Gilmore. I had to throw it out there, John.
But how does this look if Stephon Gilmore goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? And they get to the Super Bowl and Brady wins the MVP again and Stephon Gilmore intercepts Patrick Mahomes to save the game. I mean, that's not a good look, right? But
not really. I mean, because like the Patriots and the Bucs aren't the same team. I mean, the Patriots aren't.
No, I know that. But now you've allowed the quarterback to go to Tampa, which he chose.
Yeah, that's
a horrible look.
Not really. It's only a horrible look if you're looking for it to be a horrible look. Like players move on. Players move on all the time.
If he goes to that team with Tom Brady. This is probably not likely. I don't think Tampa Bay's going back to the Super Bowl, and I don't think Kansas City's going back. I said that before the season. It's too tough to go back. I mean, although Brady's the guy that keeps going up. But my thing, that's not a good look if you just – the quarterback left wins the Super Bowl in his first year. Now the cornerback, who is the defensive player of the year – goes the next year and helps him win another Super Bowl. That's an awful look.
Not really, because it doesn't change. Okay. It doesn't change the future for the Patriots. Like the
they're one and three right now.
Which you know, again, we talked about this yesterday. I mean, I think they're a really good 1-3 team. I think their record isn't quite indicative of what they are, although I think they deserve it because of the mistakes that they made. So in that sense, I think that stuff can get cleaned up, and I think this team is going to be pretty good. But, I mean, this connection, like, so if he goes to Tampa, he goes to Tampa. I mean, it's just one of many teams he could sign with. The presence of Brady there doesn't really make a difference. In fact, Brady's presence there probably heightens the likelihood that he does go to Tampa. So, I don't think this looks bad on the Patriots. Again, you know, it's just roster moves. Like, we talked quite a bit of length about the reasons why Tom Brady left. Again, if we had the power of foresight and being able to predict the future, Tom Brady would likely still be a Patriot now because Bill would have known his ability, I think, at 44, which, again, he bet on Tom being just like every single other quarterback in the history, 100-year history of the NFL. But, and he was wrong, which is fine.
If we're going to compliment everything Belichick does, we do also have to criticize his mistakes. Now, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about baseball. What happens in 3 weeks if the Red Sox are playing the Dodgers in the World Series and Mookie Betts in Game 7 hits a three-run homer in the bottom of the ninth and they win? Is that not a bad look, too, for the Red Sox? Like, you traded this guy away for Alex Verdugo.
Yeah, well, what is Verdugo doing? I mean, if that happens, it happens.
Probably not what Mookie Betts is doing.
Well, that's the thing. Mookie, we all know Mookie Betts is a great player, so he's certainly capable of doing that. You know, I criticized that move when it happened. I've slowly started to change my tune on it because, again, I mean, I think I, you know, reacted to the name. Yeah, it sucks to lose that type of talent, but, you know, the Red Sox could have something with these guys in that they got back for him. So am I going to sit there and condemn it right away? You know, maybe in my emotional reaction to it. Yeah, of course I did. I think I railed on it quite a bit, actually. But, you know, regardless of what Mookie Betts does, I mean, it doesn't matter. He's a Dodger. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the Red Sox make it a Game 7 in the World Series against the Dodgers, that's all I'll care about. I mean, if they end up losing, they lose. I mean, I'll be disappointed.
It's going to be against the Giants anyway. Don't even worry.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
Giants are going to – actually, the Dodgers could lose today, which I know everyone's rooting for the Dodgers to lose because, you know, the Dodgers are like the evil empire now of baseball, even more so than the Yankees. As a Giants fan, I want to see – Dodgers, Giants, but someone has to guarantee me that the Giants win. I need the Giants to win the World Series.
Where's the fun in that? Awesome. Where's the fun in that?
I know, that's true. What am I talking about? I want guarantees. I want the drama that goes with. But could you picture? I mean, we saw last night Red Sox, Yankees. That was fantastic. And then we could be looking at. I mean, tonight we've got Cardinals and Dodgers in a wild card game in the National League. That's awesome. And then we could have Giants, Dodgers, National League Division Series. Oh my Lord, that would be. That could really, it's not going to save baseball because baseball has a lot of issues, but it would certainly be fun to watch for five games.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, if anything, this is the best time of the year, obviously, for baseball because.
Tremendous.
I mean, depending on your perspective, last night's game was certainly entertaining and had some drama to it, at least early on, but it's. I don't know. I'm all for it. Like I have admittedly not been able to watch as much baseball as I used to. I mean, I was kind of like you, where I was like, I mean, every day. I mean, it was always TV. It was always Red Sox pregame. It was always this. Mm-hmm. It was always that. Now it's, you know, it's a little bit more sparingly, but watching playoff baseball kind of brings you right back into that where it was the most heightened intensity, and obviously that certainly helps when you have, you know, teams like the Red Sox and Yankees. Who, correct me if I'm wrong, Didn't the Yankees choose, you know, prior to knowing their opponent, to go to the Red Sox?
Yeah, because there was a mechanism in place where if the four teams tied, which would have been the Red Sox, Yankees, Blue Jays, which no one wanted to face the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays are quite capable on any given game, like scoring 12 runs and absolutely obliterating you. And they also have a couple of really good pitchers, Robbie Roy and Berrios. I mean, the team that no one wanted to see make the playoffs was the Blue Jays, who just missed making the playoffs, and then Seattle. So I think the mechanism is teams – the Red Sox were going to be the number one seed, so the number two seed could select who they wanted to play, and they picked the Red Sox over Toronto, which I think makes sense because Toronto, to me, is more dangerous than
sure.
the Red Sox.
Oh, sure. I just like that added that layer.
if that gets back to Alex Cora and he does what Belichick would do with that, which is not say it in public but say it privately, hey, boys, the Yankees wanted you. You know, so mm-hmm. let's show them that, you know, they made a mistake if they wanted you. Now, that didn't take place because it was just the two teams made it. Oh, yeah, that. But, see, you know what it is? It's so strange. Baseball, like, discourages that for some reason. Baseball needs that, like, that type of off-field stuff, right? Like,
oh, sure.
The NBA would eat that up. The NFL would eat that up. I mean, just look at now. here we are in week five, Stephon Gilmore gets released by the Patriots, and we're all going crazy. Like, is he going to Green Bay? Is he going to Kansas City? Is he going to Tampa? Where's he going? That's fantastic stuff for the sport, right? With baseball, I mean, baseball's the hot stove league used to be, like, interesting, and that's not even interesting anymore. So, yeah, that would be that's a sexy story. The Yankees wanted the Red Sox, got him, and lost.
Hey, I like it. I like it. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for the Red Sox. I'm rooting for the Red Sox as much as anything because I just – there's – the Red Sox now have almost become like the politician in a state. Like, it's almost like Ted Kennedy where, you know, like 60% of the people love him and 40% hate him. There's so much hatred towards the Red Sox in Boston. A lot of it's from the media, but even the fans, they're turned off by ownership, which I don't know why. John Henry and that group bought the team in 2002. They proceeded to win four World Series, which is four more than any of us has ever seen, right? So, like, I still – that kind of boggles my mind. I know they're outsiders, and this is the most parochial place in the world where if you're not from here, you're never accepted. But that ownership group has done a pretty damn good job for the last 20 years winning and also improving Fenway Park to the point where it's the number one tourist attraction in Boston. Before they bought it, you remember, Fenway was kind of a dump.
Kind of.
Yeah, it was just it was like an old house that had been beyond repair, right? Like, who the hell wanted to go there? They've spent a lot of money fixing up. I wish they just built a new park, you know, because you can only put so much lipstick on a pig. But, look, I always push back and go, like, Jeremy Jacobs doesn't get as much hatred as John Henry. And what the hell has Jeremy Jacobs done? You know, recently he spent to the cap, great. Mm-hmm. But for so many years, he was a penny pincher.
He got a lot of slack 90s, early 2000s. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing kind of like you keyed on was the outsiderness. And look, I mean, Red Sox ownership has done some kind of tone-deaf things before.
Yes.
Like, I remember, and I always found this comical, the whole brick thing where it's buy a brick and put your name, and it's like, and to me, it makes it look like trying to squeeze every single dollar out of people on top of all the, you know, how much it costs just to go to a game on top of like all that stuff. And then, you know, the next page you turn it and you see John Henry's super yacht. That's, you know, like $600 million and all that stuff. So there's that disconnect because like you look at Robert Kraft and he's, you know, he's Mr. Kraft, you know, to everyone. And, you know, he's, you know, at the stadium, he's personable with the players, you know, he's up there, you know, you don't get that with John Henry. You don't get that with Jeremy Jacobs for sure. You know, so I get it. I understand it. I do think it's a little over the top, but at the same time, I do understand it. But for the second day in a row, John, we were unable to do our quarterback power rankings. It's okay. It's called suspense building, and that's what we're doing. So tomorrow, Thursday, we will do that because then we also have to preview Thursday night football. So until then, I hope you guys have a great Wednesday. Hopefully, Stephon Gilmore does not sign yet. Got to get some more content out. And then tomorrow we will preview all of week five's action. So have a great day, folks, and we'll talk to you then.